News on Radio 1 at midnight with Nick Adams. Good morning. A fresh search is due to get underway later this morning for the body of an Irishman killed and secretly buried in France by the INLA more than 30 years ago.
Rising Time on RTE Radio 1 with Shea Byrne.
A very good morning to you. It's Tuesday, the 2nd of May. Shea Byrne here until 7. That's called Keep It in the Middle of the Road. It's 20 minutes past 6 o'clock. Keeping in the middle of the road for everybody. Now, good morning, Connor.
Morning, Shay.
Are you keeping it in the middle of the road?
I am sure at this time of the morning you can fly in whatever side of the road you want.
Good morning. It's 7 o'clock on Tuesday, the 2nd of May on RTE Radio 1. This is Morning Ireland with Gavin Jennings and Rachel English.
Today, Brussels gossip or a Brexit bruising? What happened at dinner with Britain and the EU? A search for a disappeared Newry teacher in France. Who is Emmanuel Macron? An African famine, a surfer rescue, a marathon winner, and here comes the sun.
A detailed report of the meeting in a German newspaper said Mr. Juncker left 10 times more sceptical than he was before about the British Prime Minister's stance on Brexit negotiations. In particular, he was said to be shocked by how quickly she expected some discussions to be concluded. The following morning, he rang the German Chancellor, Angela Merkel, and claimed that Mrs. May's approach to the talks was from a different galaxy. On the election campaign trail yesterday, here's how Theresa May responded.
I have to say that from what I've seen of this account, I think it's Brussels gossip. And just look at what the European Commission themselves said immediately after the dinner took place, which was that the talks had been constructive.
Theresa May. Arthur Beasley is European diplomatic correspondent for the Financial Times. He joins us on the line from Brussels. And joining us from London is Michael Crick, political correspondent with Channel 4 News. Arthur, let's start with you. I suppose the surprise would be if they did see eye to eye on everything, but it does sound as though this dinner was very strained.
It certainly does, Rachel. I mean, it's always said in a negotiation that nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. But I think in this case, it really is the case that absolutely nothing is agreed.
Just over a month away to the UK general election, 37 days to be exact, a poll carried out of voters in the north shows Brexit as the biggest issue there and a slight increase in the total unionist vote. It's the first of three pre-election polls carried out by polling company Lucid Talk and published in today's Northern Ireland Sun newspaper. Bill White of Lucid Talk is in Belfast this morning. Morning, Bill.
Good morning.
Over 2,000 people polled. What did they tell you?
Well, as you have just said, there has been an increased unionist vote. Now, that's to be expected, actually.
To be completely honest, I don't know a lot of things about Emmanuel Macron. I just know that he is young, he works in business, finance. I also know from TV that he was in love with his teachers.
If anyone knows anything about Emmanuel Macron, it's that he fell in love with his school teacher, Brigitte, when he was 16. She was married with three children, but she later divorced and married Macron.
It starts with just one singer. Soon, more join in. And as the great sound wave travels from the Indian subcontinent across Europe, we have a symphony of birdsong. The Dawn Chorus, live from Ireland, Sunday, May 7th on RTE Radio 1.
We're always hopeful in the initial stages. It was 24 hours. Yes, it was a long time, but he was a surfer. He was well prepared. Now, as time went on, as the afternoon drew in and early evening, I do have to say that hopes were beginning to fade that we would find him before nightfall.
We'll be right back.
Good morning, all. This is Ryan Tuberty. It is Tuesday, the 2nd of May. It is not Monday. Repeat, it is not Monday. 51551 is the text number. We're through till 10 o'clock, as always, with thanks to our friends from Second Captains yesterday for doing the honours. That was nice. Not to be here, in a good way. And now we're here. Loads to talk about, including Paula Hawkins, the author of Girl on the Train, will be joining us in the next half hour from London to talk about her new book, Into the Water, the difficult second album, as it were. The counsel for the state, Patricia McLaughlin, told Judge Terence O'Sullivan, "Judge, there's a potentially serious issue has arisen before we get any further with this jury." And it transpires that one of the juries, of the 12 jurors chosen, had written down the word barrister as her profession on the jury enrolment sheet. And Ms. McLaughlin said she considered the woman maybe unsuitable and, in fact, may not be allowed to serve on the jury. And the judge agreed, saying it may be the case that the woman may not be a practicing barrister. The whole thing could just be it's not tenable. We'd have to review the whole situation. The woman was called out from the jury room. She was called before the judge. And the judge asked the woman, "You just need to clarify. Are you not a barrister?" And she was puzzled and replied, "No, I said I'm a barista. She makes coffee." Yeah, I just love that. Good morning and hello again. Today, back to the fray. Doyle returns amid legislation paralysis and Endicott's long goodbye continues.
If you go down that model, if you go down this much derided term of new politics, then what you will end up with is a slower process for passing legislation. But when you weigh that against the successes that the government has in things like growing the economy, reducing unemployment, delivering for this country in terms of getting an agreed Brexit negotiating position, overall the government's doing a very good job since the last year and a bit since it came into
Thomas
office.
Thomas Byrne, does this explain or justify why in the Department of Education, Agriculture, Arts, Children, Foreign Affairs and Jobs, no bills have been enacted because of the new politics which your party has been so keen to promote?
It's complete rubbish. Complete and utter rubbish.
So the idea is that students borrow for their fees while they're at university and then repay them afterwards, but only if they can afford it. So the idea is that when your income hits a certain threshold, you start repaying your loan, and as your income goes up or down, the repayments rise or fall with your income.
Just one text to give us a flavour of that. Sean, parents are already crippled with bills, and who do you think will end up having to pay these loans? Families are really struggling. That's from Cathy Lee in County Wexford.
Tweet at Today SOR.
Now, we've had a statement from a spokesperson at the Department of Education and Skills in response to some criticisms made at the top of the programme by Fianna Fáil's spokesperson on education, Thomas Byrne. The statement points out that the Minister, Richard Bruton, has launched an action plan for education, and it gives a list of achievements.
We worked with him over a period of months, and then eventually when we spoke to him about moving out to a hostel, he said he'd like to go home. Now, he hadn't had a visit in over 20 years and hadn't been home. So we made contact with his family, and one of our nurses, I can't think which one it was now, but travelled up there and met his mother, I think a sister, and eventually reassured them enough about his safety to allow a visit on the basis that the nurse remained with him throughout the visit. So he went home for one visit and then two visits, and then he went for afternoons, and then eventually his mother invited him home for a weekend, and then he moved home. And it was great to see someone who had been seen as such a danger to the family was able to move home and was able to support his mother in her...
And this was somebody, as you say, he had beaten his father within an inch of his life.
He had a psychotic episode where he became very violent. Yes.
Agus anisha dadi ohain an nuacht le padro coolan.
Cormad rona agus balairi. Real an art course go gach a Dennis O'Brien the cost of huge lee harter billion euro at fadi.
It's the RT News on One on Radio One. I'm Keelan Shanley. headlines today. Denis O'Brien is ordered to pay all costs of his failed action over statements made by two TDs in the Dáil about his banking affairs. A 28-year-old man is charged with the murder of a young mother in Waterford, and HICWA has called for new legislation to improve the safeguarding of vulnerable people in care. Seamus Ruddy is one of the disappeared who are still missing. You have, of course, recovered many of the bodies since you took over. But one of those is Robert Nairac, Captain Robert Nairac. And there's a documentary going out about him tonight on RT television. But he was abducted, it's 40 years ago now, from a pub in Armagh. There's a lot of tales about what he did or didn't do at the time. Do you believe there's still hope for finding him?
Well, of course, we do indeed, and we have been speaking to your colleagues about it, about the case recently. In this winter of 84-85, the beach was completely washed away, and all we had was left was the bare rock. Over the mean 30 years since, it has kind of come and gone a little bit. Over the last few weeks, the north wind that has blown the cold air has allowed the sea to bring the sand back again. So now we're left with a beach that's quite extensive and bigger than anybody can recall in living memory.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. How does your children get on with the mother of that little boy, the mother of your son?
I think it's suffice to say that they don't get on her.
And why is that? Did they decide beforehand, no matter who she is, they're not going to have a relationship with her?
No. They picked her out and said, when they met her, and they just said, no. You know, they asked a very poignant question, which said, Dad, what do you do with her?
Obviously, she's much younger.
Yeah, well, I'm 64, and she would be 12 years younger than me.
Okay, she's 52 now. Okay.
Yeah, she had the little boy when she was 40 something.
Okay, and has that relationship, sorry, or maybe lack of relationship, but the connection between your daughters and the mother of your son, has that mellowed at all?
No.
Okay.
No, they're totally.
Well, does it affect your relationship with them then?
With them?
Yes.
Well, it does insofar as I miss the intimacy of a father-daughter relationship.
Yeah.
And that's how they live life, and that's how they learned how to. This is how you deal with an old thing like me. You ignore them.
Yeah, but you were their father.
I know, and they were my daughters.
How's it going, Joe?
You say Bruno Mars put on a very energetic show, or so I hear. I was there, but I didn't see a thing. Why?
Purely because people decided that they were going to stand in the seating area.
Contacted Joe because we have a problem with respite. Myself and my wife, Madeline, have four children. There's three special needs.
Yeah.
Rewind, and we go back to last July. We do have 3 to 4 respite weeks ends a year. Now that has been gone because the HSC feel fit to fill up the respite house with residential.
This is all over Ireland. It's not just in County Louth. And we, the parents and friends of the intellectually disabled, we are in existence 42 years, and we feel that we're being punished. We're the first generation that took them home and minded them, did not put them in an institution. And as Patsy said, we're saving the government money. Mm-hmm. But who is going to look after our family members when we pass on?
Hello, how are you on this Tuesday? I don't know about you, but there's an air of sort of, we're still on holidays around the place. Probably the fine weather. And always the Tuesday after bank holiday feels like two Mondays rolled into one. Everyone's just a little bit, oh yeah, really? Oh, do we have to go back to work? Oh. Anyway, anything on your mind, 51551 or redrt.ie. And seeing as it is sunny out there, although it's not 20 degrees, by a long shot, but it is sunny. I've been saying this for years. I was often cycling into work and you'd see a group of lads working on the roads and have their tops off on a fine day like today, and you'd say to yourself, are they using sunscreen? And I used to say it in jest and slag them off and all that sort of thing, but it is quite a serious issue. And I was listening to Kevin O'Hagan on Morning Ireland this morning saying that 1 in 4 cases of skin cancer in this country are in the construction industry and in the agricultural sector. So obviously they're not applying sunscreen.
In a way, when I was watching it, I was actually thinking I wouldn't have minded being that passenger myself, because literally as they were dragging him off the plane, he must have thought, mind you, he wouldn't have known that it was going to go viral so quickly, because we live in an age where everything is filmed. But it gave him the rock solid defence, yes, or the rock solid argument. I loved when the police, after the immediately after in the aftermath, they issued this release saying that unfortunately the passenger banged his head as he was exiting the plane, and we're kind of going, no, we saw the video. Yeah, yeah. He wasn't exiting the plane. Yeah. He was being hauled off, and it was an appalling thing for United to do.
So you think between 5 and 10 million?
Do you know, I can't imagine anybody settling for less than that.
I swear to God, the last week it's changed completely. I haven't had a conversation with my mother in over a year, since before we went to Australia in 2014. So it would have been around Christmas time, 2014 it would have been Christmas right. time. And
so
I went up
two years.
Yeah. And all you get out for when you talk to her is like, rah, 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 and she could maybe get one word or something, but you wouldn't know what she was talking
about. Very
sad, yeah. And it was awful. And it's been going on for a long time. In Australia, like last year, January last year, I was told she had days to live. She's still going. God, like she's still going. I don't know how she's doing it, but she's still there, but she's eating everything. But on Sunday, I went up to her. And I just said, hey, ma'am. And she said, I'm very sad. And I nearly fell off my stand. And I could understand this. That was a sentence. And even though she was saying she was sad, I thought, this is brilliant. She can talk. So I said, what are you sad about? And she said, oh, I don't know. And then I said, are you comfortable? And she said, I want to stand up. And I'm going, this is brilliant. And my mother can't stand now because she's been in bed, bedridden for 2 years.
Yeah.
And I said, and I thought, well, I can't tell her that you can't stand up. So I said to her, ma'am, I said, you're 84. I said, you've been standing all your life. Isn't it time you had a bit of a rest? And she laughed and she said, it is.
Ray, thank you. Hello, good afternoon. And you're very welcome to Tuesday's Drive Time. And coming up here on today's programme, a third day in the witness box for TD Joan Burton. 7 accused deny the false imprisonment of the former Taoiseach. Study now, pay later. We'll be hearing the arguments for and against a new student loan scheme. Government to unveil its Brexit strategy. And later, we check in on the general election campaign in Northern Ireland. And stressed out, burnt out, but committed to their cause, a study on the well-being of hospital doctors. The text is 51551, the tweet at DriveTimeRTE, and the email is drivetime@rte.ie.
Was there a big disappointment after the loss in the league final to Kerry?
It was, yeah. Like I think as footballers, as competitors, you know, you always want to win. You're not going to win. And that drive for success and the drive to be the best, you know, you can be, is innate, and we all want to kind of reach the pinnacle in every game we play, and definitely in a final.
Now, in her political column this week, Olivia O'Leary admits to journalistic snobbery.
During a strike by petrol tanker drivers in 1981, I went out with one of the army drivers who were bringing supplies to the pumps. The soldier worked a long day, and I finished my piece, remembering the advertising campaign, by saying that somebody should have given him a Yorkie bar. The headline writer picked it up, saying, "No one gave Corporal Cuddihy a Yorkie bar." When I came into the Irish Times the next day, the advertising manager ran over to tell me that Rountree McIntosh had just been on to take out a full-page ad for the next day with the heading, "Yorkie, that's the stuff to give the troops." What's worse, a big box of Yorkie bars was delivered to me at the paper. I sent it up to the Army Hospital. The advertising department was delighted that I'd written something which generated an ad, but I was mortified. We in the newsroom kept ourselves piously apart from the advertising side of the house, protested our independence if anyone dared to mention the consequences of criticising powerful commercial interests. We would not be bought. Snobbishly, we totally ignored the fact that it was advertising, as much as the paper's cover price, that paid our salaries. We might have thought of ourselves as professionals. The truth was that we were trade.
I suppose for me, it came when I was coming towards the end of my time as a trainee in gastroenterology and general medicine in Dublin, where I guess I started to find myself, I guess, despairing a lot of the time, really, finding work very difficult to manage to get through. And there were days where I really struggled to get out of the car to motivate myself. I can remember one day in particular sort of arriving for work at 7:30 and just sitting in the car and till about 8 o'clock, and the bleep kept going off, and I was ringing back with my mobile, but I almost felt like I couldn't go in the door, you know. And it was another morning, I was driving to work through the same road I drove every morning, and I remember thinking one morning, God, I'd love to be involved in a small accident, maybe just if I broke my arm or something, just to get out of it for a few weeks. And when I got home that night, I just thought to myself that's not a right way to be thinking, that's very distorted, that's very wrong. So I resolved to get help for myself, and you know, my employer helped with that. The hospital I was working in at the time, they had a good employee assistance program, which I previously hadn't been aware of, but I got some help with that. I got some help from my GP, a fantastic family, and that sort of helped me get through it. And I suppose then, you know, I think it's possibly something that stays with you on and off throughout your life a bit. Like any chronic disease, you can control it for the most part. And I suppose maybe having come through it a bit myself, I tried to help out some of my colleagues who I saw in similar situations.
And were you able to analyse, maybe not then, but with the benefit of hindsight, why it might have happened to you?
Well, I suppose the occupational stress I was under was dreadful, really. You know, I was working very long hours, about 70 hours a week for 7 or 8 years in a row at that stage. And I guess one of the things I found hardest was, you know, the pressure. I was spending a lot of time dealing with very acute patients, and, you know, they're very unwell. It's difficult. It's a very stressful job anyway. But what I found really hard was I was constantly apologising for how long people were waiting to get a bed, how long people were waiting to get investigations.
Tonight on Arena, Sarah Dunant has the Borgias at the heart of her new novel, In the Name of the Family, and a supernatural thriller from Irish film director Lorcan Finnegan.
Sometimes Ryan wants to remind Cork City that it can't hide its nature from him. He wants to stand on Patrick's Bridge and roar at both North and South Banks, "Don't think I don't have the bones of you." This city, like all cities, hates its natives. It would rather be in a constant state of replenishment than own up to what it has warped. Ryan sees it well enough. The tribes in town, hipster baristas and skinny suits, and the tides of students pushing the rest of them back up the hills.
Lisa McInerney there, reading from her new novel, The Blood Miracles, which is published by John Murray, and bringing us to just 25 minutes to 8 on Tuesday night's Arena. Standing in front of me now, Josie Ann Clark and Ben Walker. They're going to perform a song called Something Familiar.
It was something familiar, like the sound of the sea. I forgot I remembered, like some lost part of me.
Ah yes, they finally give me the green light, and now I'm out of the trap like a greyhound. 2 hours of top drawer tunes on the way. In there we've got some old-timey Americana from the Delmore Brothers. We've got soulful sounds from Otis Redding, Earth, Wind and Fire. Hi as well to Ted Sheehy, ditto there. Another fan of Marlon Williams, just like myself, sending me all the best from Roscommon. I've been around Roscommon quite a bit there in the last couple of weeks. I think I must have passed through Rooski about 3 or 4 times. My carbon footprint in Roscommon, I think, is fairly heavy at the moment, and Leitrim too.
RTE Radio 1.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Late Debate with John Murray. Our panel of five have plenty to discuss tonight, from a stubborn Taoiseach to a bloody difficult woman to a blatant plagiarist and any other business that crosses our minds. That's all on the way. First, with a summary of the news, here's Ray Kennedy.
John, thank you and good evening from the newsroom. The Irish Greyhound Board has agreed to sell the Harold's Cross Stadium in Dublin to the Department of Education.
We don't have investment going into schools, hospitals, housing on anywhere near the scale required. And when you talk about record, we have 2,500 children homeless. You know, we have more people homeless than we've ever had in our history of our state. Do you know what I mean? So how is that a success? And these issues weren't prioritised within the negotiations.
No, but nobody says that that's a success. Nobody likes homelessness. You see, if I...
But it is about your priorities.
I'm going to Berlin next week or in 2 weeks, and I will see homeless people there once I step off my plane, and go to the main train station and stuff. These are problems we have everywhere in Europe, in all the different countries. They're not that particular to Ireland. If you do look into the statistics, they are there in other countries too.
Pour s'inscrire à l'Alliance française de Shanghai, de Tokyo, de Mexico,
where all things are possible, who still wonders if the dream of our ancestors is alive in our time.
You work hard for what you want in life.
You work hard for what you want in life.
That your word is your bond.
That your word is your bond.
Great crack indeed, yes. Okay.
Very good.
Now, a question of all of you now. Have any of you in the past been guilty of plagiarism? Pat Deering, have you ever delivered a speech that came from elsewhere?
No, I don't think so. No, John, I have to say. No.
You don't think so?
No.
You're not sure now.
I'm very certain. I might have used the word here and there now. Okay, maybe a phrase, but not a paragraph.
I think everybody has at some stage or other stolen a phrase or quoted somebody that they've heard before. When they strike something, there's something that sums it up. Oh, of course, everybody. But not
word for word.
And not for going on for 5 minutes.
You work in a university. It is a problem in universities, Rory.
In what way is it a problem? Well,
I mean, it's not a problem.
students.
Yes, there are software systems in place, aren't there?
Yes, there are software systems that can pick up students and similarity with already published manuscripts. So their scripts are actually cross-referenced with that. We've used that. Plagiarism is an issue in academia.
It's coming up to 14 minutes past 11 o'clock. It's RTE Radio 1. This is Late Date. And it's Tuesday night and we're with you live from Studio 6 right through until 2 o'clock. Hope you had a great day.
In 1968, this was the song that didn't win the Eurovision Song Contest.
Congratulations. It was a home game. We'd won the previous year. Cliff Richard was a hero. So we were kind of buoyant.
The winning team of Phil Coulter and Cliff Richard was pipped at the post by the Spanish entry.
Well, when I came off stage that night, I thought myself, I was robbed. I mean, I'm finding it hard to take the whole thing seriously, but if they do find that I won, that would be wonderful.
The rumour was that Spain's fascist dictator rigged the vote. But how could he and why would he? The mystery is explored in the documentary On One, the year General Franco stole the Eurovision.
And finally, Dublin Airport. Northeast, 7 knots, fine, 10 miles, 1,025, rising slowly. And that's all from Metairn for the moment. Have a good night.
And thanks so much for that. Matthew Martin there at Metairn. News headlines at midnight on the way.